Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope, there we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Horford open three.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Chris Gasper and Jim Murray. Brought to you by Nissan, Shaking Crab, Mass General Brigham, and Tullamore 2 on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Grant Williams is going to dribble out the clock. He had a big game. That was his 10th rebound for a double-double, and the Celtics sweep the two-game set from Detroit this week. Celtics sweep the back-to-back. They win their sixth in a row. Your final score here in Detroit, Celtics 117 and the Pistons 108.
Well, that was last Saturday's game. Last Friday night's game, whatever it was. Hey, look. They're winning.
It's right.
It's kind of loose here.
We could just keep, basically we could just have Wallach record that. And it could just be like, again, another Simpsons episode where somebody says something and then it's like, the Celtics win against New Orleans.
Yeah.
It just gets like inserted.
Yeah, right. Just fill it in.
Yeah, just fill in the blank.
And Wallach has essentially become like the now voice of your Boston Celtics.
Radio voice,
on 98.5, the Sports Hub. So, but Wallach was on the call last night in New Orleans with Cedric Maxwell, as Derek White scored 26 points. Celtics defeat the Pelicans 117-109. Celtics extend their winning streak to 9. And it hit me in watching this game last night, where the Pelicans, by the way, were without Zion Williamson. So I went into it a little miffed because, like, I'm into this game. This should be a good test. Pelicans been all right, but I know Zion, because just stop eating, because he's always hurt, seemingly. But, he was out, but the end of the third quarter into the fourth, like the Celtics got really, really sloppy, just a million turnovers, couldn't hang onto the ball. The Pelicans shot themselves back into this game, and it's like, oh, God. But much like the game against OKC earlier in the week, I know don't cross sports, but whatever. It's our show. I'm going to do it. Watching them last night, Chris, they're like the Bills of the NBA in that their margin of error is so wide. It doesn't mean, because they, if you watch this last night, like, it was offensive how bad they were with turnovers for a stretch. You're like, hang on to the ball, you dicks.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown had seven. Ugh. I mean, he had seven assists, but he had seven turnovers.
Awful. It doesn't matter. Like, they're so deep. They're so much better than so many of these other middling teams in the league. Their margin of error is like the Buffalo Bills. They can shoot themselves out of a funk and out of a bad way, and it doesn't really matter if they're having a bad night. Like that OKC game, and I know your colleague at the Globe, Gary Washburn, wrote about this, and I felt the same way watching this thing. These last couple of years, that's 100% a loss for the Celtics. They're in a funk. They're bitching at the officials. OKC is, they came to play that night. Like, it was like, okay, kind of almost like a scheduled loss for them. But no, Marcus Smart has a ridiculous second half, and they, like, willed themselves back into the game, and they didn't lose it. Where they absolutely would have lost that 100 times out of 100 over the last couple of years. And this last night, too, like, I think you would have seen the shoulders shrug. We're sloppy. We're playing like idiots. We're on the road. Maybe we were thinking about New Orleans doing to do whatever. And they let go of the rope and they lose. But their margin of error is so huge. It's Buffalo Bills-esque in that it's like, whatever, we're down 20. We'll be back in this game in, like, just a couple of scores. And then we'll break your will and we'll win. And that's the way they look right now.
No, I mean, obviously, 9 in a row, they're playing a really high level, particularly offensively, and I think you're seeing enough defense in spurts to be able to lock teams down and to be able to lock down wins. They have been exactly as advertised, really, probably outside of a couple of contests against Cleveland. The Celtics are a team, as you said, with a ton of talent and a high margin for error. And I think what's been really impressive to me, the most impressive thing, I think, during this stretch is the fact that they haven't had a full complement of players. Like, I was excited to see that Malcolm Brogdon was back in the lineup last night after missing three games with the hamstring, but he didn't do anything, and they didn't need him to do anything. And what's impressive about the Celtics is not having a full complement of players, and that includes Rob Williams, by the way. I mean, we don't talk about that all the time, but he's a starter for this team. They don't have him. Guys are in and out of the lineup, whether it's Horford or Marcus Smart didn't play last night. Malcolm Brogdon misses games, and it seems like they don't miss a beat as long as Tatum and Brown are in there. And even when one of those guys is out, it feels like, Jaylen Brown was out. It's like, oh, not a huge problem. Not a huge problem for us. So just the overall firepower and offensive execution of the Celtics is very impressive.
Yeah, and you know, it was a dominant first quarter. I thought they were going to end up blowing them out, but again, they got sloppy, but
yeah,
still ended up having a good win. And the thing is, like, over 82 games, and we have Brian Robb of Mass Live covering the Celtics as well, like, you know, it's going to happen. There's going to be nights off. You know, you're thinking about Seaport doing whatever. Like, there's going to be games where you lay an egg. But it's funny, just recently, like, even when it looks like it's trending that way, they play themselves out of it. And there's been that Chicago game earlier, like, they got squashed. But now it makes me think, like, man, you should have at least taken one of those games from Cleveland. If they're playing like this right now, they would have won one of those games. And so I'll ask, let me be play the role of Mr. Facilitator here. Like, and it's something that Felger brought up the last couple of days on Felger and Maz. Does it already feel like it's kind of over? Like, to look at it in that the East is the Celtics, the Bucks just get us to the playoffs when these two will meet? Because as bullish as I felt about Cleveland, they've come back down to earth. Like, yeah, it doesn't feel like there's going to be any other kind of upstart team. Trades can happen, obviously. But as of right now, it does feel like the East is a two-team race.
Yeah, I still, and look, not good news for the Sixers last night. Tyrese Maxey with a foot injury. The x-rays were clear. He's going to get an MRI today, I believe. I still think Philly, when fully healthy, if they can figure it out, if Doc can figure it out, can challenge the top two teams. The other thing to remember, and I know we're counting Milwaukee, you know, Milwaukee doesn't have Chris Middleton back. So we can all anoint the Celtics now, but what happens when Middleton comes back? And I know Celtics fans will say, hey, what about when Robert Williams comes back? Legit. But I mean, Chris Middleton specifically is a player who plays really well against your team and is a matchup issue for your team and has made some of the biggest shots and the biggest spots against your team. So I don't think it's completely over. I do think the Celtics and Bucks have separated themselves from the pack, but I think there's a team that's in the pack now, whether it's Miami, who's technically out of the playoffs right now. They wouldn't even be in the play-in. They're 11th in the East. Or it's Philly, or maybe the Hawks. There's talk that the Hawks are going to trade John Collins. I still like the Hawks a lot. One of those teams might figure it out or reconfigure their roster and challenge. And the reason I say that, too, is that, again, I think it's a little early for us to anoint teams, but this time last year, we would have counted the Celtics out.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah, no, I mean, I remember this time, yeah, around this time last year, they were running, the team was running spots leading up to Christmas, basically begging people to buy tickets. And like, hey, like, we'll give you a bunch of food if you rent out a luxury box, huh? Please? And then they did turn around. No, it's a good point, because the Celtics looked dead in the water at this time last year. So maybe Miami can get their crap together. But other teams, like Brooklyn, like, that thing seems cooked.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You see why Durant wanted to trade. I mean, it's pretty obvious now. They're going nowhere.
B-Rob, premature to say this, that it's a two-team race in the conference?
It's not. Unless one of these other teams make a big splash somewhere else, whether it's finding a third star for Miami or Philly or whatever, if really shaking things up. But it's just the level with the Celtics are at offensively, and you described it perfectly. They were like, they were messing around for a lot of that game last night, and they still like things didn't get not comfortable at all for them until the very end there. So the fact that they can do this at this level, just 15 games into working with a new head coach here and not having a full cast of characters, it's kind of scary what they could look like in another 20-30 games. It kind of reminds me of what 07-08 team looked like coming out of the gate, where that team was just on like a mission, and they're more of a defensive team than an offensive team. But the level of domination we're seeing right now is kind of getting close to that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, actually, that parallel to the 07-08 team. And you know, the difference obviously is nobody knew how that mix was going to work. You know, this year coming into it, we had these high expectations for the Celtics, but you weren't sure they would meet them, and I think they absolutely have. B-Rob, I do have to take you to task, though, for something that you wrote. I'm reading. This is a Brian Robb, Mass Live, that you wrote off this game. You wrote, Celtics' core have a history of surrendering big leads over much of the past two seasons in high-leverage situations. One near collapse in Game 7 in Miami last year almost kept them out of the NBA Finals. Joe Mazzulla had a front-row look for all those contests as an assistant on the Celtics bench. That's not true. He was in the second row. How dare you, B-Rob? He was not in the front row. He was sitting behind the bench.
That's fair.
That is factually inaccurate, B-Rob. I'm taking you to task for this. He did not have a front row seat. He had a second row seat behind the bench. I don't know. I don't even know if he saw some of these collapses. His view might have been blocked. It might have been blocked. We don't even know that he saw them, B-Rob.
Has he been that much of a factor in this, you think?
Offensively, I think yes.
Yeah.
Because when you're at a historically great offensive pace right now, and what has changed for this team, like, who gets the credit for that? Sam Hauser, like Lou Cornette, like, yeah, those guys have been good here, but no, the brand of basketball the Celtics are playing offensively right now is far superior than what we saw last year in terms of the unselfishness and the ball movement and guys cutting all over the place. Like, we were like, on this show, we were banging our heads against the wall for the first 30, 40 games of the last year.
That's
be like,
true.
What do they look like? This is not a fun team to watch. This is why they were, you know, trying to get people in the arena. It wasn't a fun team to watch. This team, like on a Monday night against like the Wizards, like the Garden is going nuts. They love this team. They love what they're seeing because the offense is so fun to watch right now. And I think that does start with the head coach.
Yeah, and even when they're playing, so I was in the building last week for that Denver game. Like, okay, real competition. Let's see what this is about. And they absolutely obliterated that team. Now, I looked at my phone at one point. I'm like, Denver's going to be on the second night of a back-to-back. There were some things that they did that I tweeted at the time. Like, someone that watches the Nuggets, please tell me, is this team this bad offensively? And that, like, it looked like bad Celtics of the last couple of years, B-Rob, that it's like,
yeah,
come down the floor, 3 seconds off the shot clock, jack up a bad three. But, you know, and credit to the Celtics, too. They were just better offensive team that they killed that team. And so, like, I don't know. Like, they're going to look like this. It does feel like they're a team on a mission, and they're doing things that they haven't been able to do the last couple of years. And that, again, these two wins, that last night and that one earlier in this week against OKC, I thought it was their best win of the year. Because, again, 100 times out of 100 of the last two seasons, they lose that game.
Easily. And that is a difference right now when you have guys that are able to, you know, fall into their roles. Like last night, Tatum not having the shot fall much gives up 10 assists. Jaylen Brown had a bunch of bad turnovers, but guess what? Like having racking up the assists like he did too, that's a positive sign. And then you're getting guys like Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, whoever, step up on any different night when they need it. It's really looking like it's coming together here. And Rob Williams may or may not be back in the next couple of weeks. And then they have a really long runway to get to the best version of themselves for what could be an epic Eastern Conference battle against the Bucks here down the road.
All right, we'll get more of your thoughts if you want to talk Celtics in this game and this team as of right now, how they're looking. 617-779-0985. Your calls will be coming up. We'll also talk for the first time this season on the Sports Hub Celtics Show to Chris Forsberg, who covers the Seas for NBC Sports Boston. We'll talk to him next.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem?
No match for a little DIY duct tape.
Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show drives the lane. On your home of the Celtics, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Sports Hub Celtics Show. Let's bring in for the first time this season on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, cover the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. You know him, you love him. Chris Forsberg joining us here. Hey, Chris.
What up? What's going down?
Not too much. I think the last time I saw you when we spoke, I was hammered post-killers at TD Garden. I don't really remember much of the conversation.
Amazing night.
Yeah.
A great WFNX reunion that I didn't expect. And, it was a good time.
Well, so I opened today saying that the margin of error for this Celtics team right now, based on the sloppiness last night and even that OKC game earlier in the week, it reminds me of the Bills in the NFL in that they can play like complete ass for stretches, but it doesn't matter. They're going to end up coming back and breaking your will. And I think you saw that last night with, again, how sloppy they got for stretches there in New Orleans. And that OKC game, what is that? Is it a talent thing? Is it just because we've seen this jump from Tatum this year? Is it more of the offensive-minded approach from Joe Mazzulla? What is behind that?
it is interesting, right? Like, I do think there's this natural propensity, and I think part of the reason their defensive numbers have slipped so much is that when you're scoring as easily as they have for stretches, you sort of take your foot off the accelerator on the other end. And that's not to justify it. Like, really great teams figure out how to do both, and I think the Celtics need to figure that out. But whereas last year it felt like they took their foot off the accelerator and then everything just crumbled in the first half of the year, just like you said, they're sort of able to weather it this year, and they're a little bit smarter about things. They don't let completely go of the rope, and they find a way to kind of get through it. I still say, like, really great teams go find a way to not only beat teams but put your foot on their throat. And I'm worried about Tatum's minutes and, you know, just the general wear and tear on some of these guys. So I do hope they find a way to sort of take that up a level. But it is like a credit. None of these wins have been particularly sexy. And yet, especially that OKC game, just finding a way to win is important because, you know, it's better than losing.
Yeah, no question about that. One thing I want to ask you about, Chris, is, again, you look at the three-point shooting. You know, 20 more three-pointers last night. They lead the NBA in three-pointers made, 259, 16.2 per game. It's obviously a huge weapon for them, and they can space the floor, and they have so many guys who can knock down those shots. Is the level of three-point shooting they're showing so far to you, do you feel like that's mostly sustainable for them?
I feel like it is. I mean, the looks have been great. I mean, that's the other thing, is I always kind of go back to shot quality, and I haven't looked in the last week or so, but I would assume that, like, the numbers have been even better. It feels like they are just getting great looks. And I'd like, will Hauser shoot 50% for the year? Probably not. But most of these guys have proven to be, you know, in that 38 to 40 range. And I don't think it's just going to fall off a cliff. Now, there might be stretches, you know, guys go cold, and maybe you got to be a little bit more diligent about attacking the basket at that point. But don't feel like Tatum's even really close to getting it going beyond the arc. So I do think it's sustainable. But certainly there's a balance. I can't, like, be totally into it. I do want to see when it goes cold. That second quarter last night, all of a sudden, I think they missed, their first six or seven threes of that quarter. You know, I needed someone to attack the basket. That's where Brogdon's got to sort of steady things. That's where either if Tatum goes back on the court, he's got to attack. You know, there's instances where they got to be a little bit more smart about the threes they're taking. But yeah, I can't argue when the looks are really good, because they're stretching people out so much with the talent that they have.
Talking to Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston, here on the Sports Up Celtics show. So before the season, when Danilo Gallinari went down, Chris, I was like, oh, don't try to sell me on Sam Hauser, please. Like, this whole Celtics thing is going to happen. Well, he's been shooting the lights out, and that shot looks for real. Is this, you know, kind of lightning in a bottle right now, or can he be potentially like a, and I mean a real off-brand version of Duncan Robinson for this team?
Well, I think the Duncan Robinson comparisons are getting a little bit criminal, because not only has he proven to be, at least right now, obviously, as Duncan struggles with his shot, he's proven to be a more consistent shooter right now, but his defense isn't clearly as bad as what Duncan has been exposed. And in fact, teams are, like, really going at Hauser right now and kind of figuring out, like, he's not a great defender one-on-one, but at least he moves his feet and he has some size. And so he's, you know, he had one isolation against Ingram last night. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe he actually stayed in front of him and forced a kind of a bad jumper. I do think it's sustainable. Even last year, there was people that were in the organization that were really high on Hauser and wished that he got some of the minutes that Aaron Nesmith got. I can't profess to say even I thought Nesmith should have been playing in that instance, just because they needed to figure out what they had in him. But it all really worked out, because elevating him from the two-way deal, they had to go back and redo the deal this summer. You got him under contract 3 years, like $5.5 million. It's like, could be one of the greatest or better values in the NBA. You still have to see that he's got to still perform defensively in the playoffs and be able to be out there in those instances if he's going to continue to have high value. But I don't think this is just like, you know, a hot start to the year. Every time he shoots it feels like it's going in. That there's just not a lot of players in the league that feel that way. And so credit to him, because I think he did make a lot of strides. He struggled just putting the ball on the ground and getting over half court or like defending last year in the small glimpses we had. He had that one bad summer league game, the only time we saw him this summer, and yet nothing really ruffled him. He was just ready for the opportunity.
Speaking of contracts and guys who are seizing the opportunity, you know, I think that Grant Williams has had a good year so far, and really the stretch where he's been a starter here the last seven games to me has been pretty impressive. I know the numbers aren't off the charts, but it's been eye-opening for me in terms of what he's done as a starter. 54% from the field, 43% from three, averaging about 11 points a game here. What do you see his role being, and is he making himself a lot of money? Because I think there's a lot of teams in the league that could use a guy like Grant Williams and maybe now look at him as a starter.
Yeah, no, it no doubt. Like I feel like I thought for sure they would, both sides would kind of find a number before the extension deadline on the eve of the season. But clearly Grant sort of banked on himself, and credit to him, because I think that adds a little bit of pressure coming into the season, but he certainly hasn't shown it. And just like you said, the numbers aren't like great. I mean, well, I'd say that, and like, you know, based on the over 25 start to his 3-point shooting, I don't know if we ever thought he'd be a 40% 3-point shooter. And that feels like a real weapon right now, and not just from the corner. He's driving closeouts now and able to put the ball on the ground. Another guy that went into the summer without a lot of time, found a way to take his game forward. The big question for me is, like, what's the ceiling? Is he the eventual Al Horford replacement in the starting lineup? Is he just a high level role player, like sixth man, seventh man, whatever it is? I think he's shown that he has the potential to really grow into that role. The size will always sort of be the one thing that conspires against them. And yet, like, I think the biggest thing he's brought this year has been just the defensive versatility. He can guard Jokic, and even if he struggles in that instance, he's guarding point guards on another night. And if the Celtics are going to reach their highest form, they need that defensive versatility, and they need to get back to the way they were playing last year. So Grant's a big part of it. The one thing I wonder, Gasper, is like, what team is paying him $18, $19 million next year? And does Grant want to go play for the Indiana Pacers or the Orlando Magic or whatever team can come up with that money? I think there has to be a balance there in terms of, you know, he's got a pretty good thing going here. He's pretty locked in with Jason Tatum, and there's a value in that as well. So I'll be very interested to see how his free agency played out. And yet, like, if all he did was drive up his number from the Celtics, then kudos to him for betting on himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, I agree with you from this regard. I do think he probably has more value to a contender, but I'm just listening to you talk about him, and I totally agree. I mean, there aren't a lot of guys in the league who can guard 1 through 5 and knock down threes. I mean, that alone is a super valuable. Those are two super valuable skills. So obviously they're more valuable to a contender. He's not going to tip the balance for a rebuilding team, but I'll be intrigued to see what the market is for him. I think he's making himself a lot of money here.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
So, you know, the players obviously talk very highly about Joe Mazzulla. He's letting them play out of ruts like you saw last night. Have you heard any rumblings or...
How do we feel about that? How do we feel about that, Jim?
It makes me crazy sometimes. There's times where I'm screaming at the TV, like, call a timeout! It's like, you know, it's times where it's like, I feel like I'm watching Brad Stevens again. But considering how the players just feel about him and how they've looked, have you heard any rumblings or any thought of them taking the interim tag off?
So I think so much of it hinges on what happens with Ime. I don't think they can take that interim tag off until there's a resolution. And so, you know, maybe if the Brooklyn thing had gone all the way to the finish line, there would have been an opportunity to promote Joe and give him that security. But credit to him, like, despite all, like, being thrown into a tough situation and despite having to sort of navigate with this interim tag, you know, like, he doesn't let him phase him. He just sort of does his job, keeps driving his minivan, does what he does. I think that's just I can't imagine it was easy in any regard to be thrown into that situation and to sort of like stay true to yourself. You know, he will not call these timeouts despite all of us idiots telling him he should. And then you look at the data and there's no unequivocal analytical data that suggests that timeouts really do stem runs, like, or else there would be a hard and firm pattern to that. You know, he's leaned heavy on his guys because he wants to win. And I know sometimes that drives me nuts, but I get it. Like, he's a first-year coach trying to just kind of prove himself, too, and there's high expectations. So I think it's really neat that he came into this and he hasn't, like, compromised himself to sort of do this. And, again, I just go back to it. Like, I just feel like it's got to be such a super hard. His head's got to be spinning, and yet he never really lets on to it. I do think the players respect that. They respected him before he got put into this. And so I think whenever the EMA resolution comes along, you'll see some sort of transition to him being the guy.
Chris, I want to zoom out to sort of like a 30,000-foot view thing here. Celtics are off to such a tremendous start, and we're all loving it in October and November, but really this team will be measured in the spring, basically in June. I know we're a little bit of ways to when most guys in the NBA who signed contracts during the summer can be traded. It's not till December 15th. But when you look at this team, what do they need? And is there anything in terms of the way Peyton Pritchard and Derek White have played with Smart and Brogdon out of the lineup that maybe gives the Celtics more flexibility if they want to, you know, redistribute the roster, as I like to call it, and maybe try and get another wing and move a point guard? Do you feel like you need another big to back up Robert Williams, even though Cornette has been really good? When you look at it from that standpoint, you know, what moves do you foresee potentially down the road for them?
Sure. I think it's a little bit of a tricky balance. I think you need Rob back and to figure out like how it looks at that point. Are you able to get by with Al probably still not playing the second night of back-to-backs? How much do you have to kind of bring Rob along, and how much minutes can he play per game? You know, maybe in that instance, the big man position is still something you have to think about. And yet, if Cornette plays like this and you feel comfortable that you can get through with that sort of rotation and covering for Al and Rob when they're not out there, then maybe in my mind, I've always thought like the wing position will end up being the area they maybe try to tighten up the most. And yet I say that, and Hauser is, you know, come on. And like, if you feel comfortable with him being on that defensively, he can be okay in the playoffs. Maybe that lessens that need. I know people will say, well, if Peyton's not going to play, maybe you just need to consider making that move. And he's probably undoubtedly their best trade asset, but you know, he only makes a couple million dollars. There's not a lot you can bring back by using him. You can talk about bundling him and Gallinari if Gallinari's not going to come back. And, you know, I just don't know. I'm not sure where you're getting a player that will be in this rotation or play enough to pacify them. Like you heard, probably this week, some people started talking about Jakob Poeltl down in San Antonio. He's in a contract year. He doesn't want to come here and play 12 minutes a night. And I think the Spurs would, if they can, they'd probably love to keep him. So I just don't know how it'll all play out. I just know the Celtics have felt pretty comfortable with what they've got, and they wanted to wait until further in the year. I still think it's probably that disabled player exception and using that to get someone slightly more than the minimum that's waived by a team that starts the Wemby tanking. And maybe that's how you solidify your roster instead of like splurging assets, which you can use and sort of figure out over the summer how to maybe bolster any real pressing needs.
What about the trade exceptions? You know, they have the Schroeder one, which expires in February. That's about $6 million. And then they have Juan Hernan Gomez one, right? Hernan Gomez one, that's about 6.9.
And so like certainly assets that can be used, I think, the recent history suggests that they're more likely to vaporize than to be used. But if the right player is out there, the question is, do you spend another draft pick with the trade exception to bring in a guy that's your 10th, 11th man? And maybe you do. Maybe like, cause they certainly needed another body in the finals this year. I feel better about their depth this year, but like, yeah, like you said, it's October and November. I try not to get like, drink the green Kool-Aid too much or as much as I usually do, but you need to balance it. And so like, let's talk in December, January, let's see what they do against the Bucks. Let's see how they look. Let's see what happens when they hit their first patch of adversity, when some of these guys go cold. We'll find out more about this team. I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but the season is like super long, and we've only sort of scratched the surface, which is why all the MVP talk and, like, you know, printing the finals tickets. It's premature, but it's fun.
It has been fun. But, yeah, you got to wait till there's, like, too many minutes for Malcolm Brogdon and Marcus Smart throws a chair. Then we'll have some adversity to talk about, Chris. All right, Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston joining us for the first time this season on the Sports Hub Celtics show. We'll talk to you another time, Chris. Thanks.
I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Forsby.
Chris Forsberg joins us here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Next, we'll hear from you. Your thoughts on the Seas right now after that win in New Orleans. They won 9 straight, 617-779-0985. Back after this.
More Celtics talk coming up on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem?
No match for a little DIY duct tape.
Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go.
No match for a little...
dang it, wait.
Duct tape and a wrench.
Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench.
And a bucket, and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape.
Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the Sports Hub Celtic Show with Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Caden to the right. Backs up with McCollum on him on a switch. Hauser for three. Makes it!
Make them pay. Make them pay.
Second three of the night for Hauser, and it's a 13-point game again.
Sam Hauser. Sam Hauser's the factor. That's why the Celtics are on a 9-game winning streak. Like, it is kind of cute what you guys do. It's fun. Like, it's, you know, and I so far, you know, I'll take the blind to death. Like, because I sat here and was like, don't try to sell me on Sam Hauser. You signed Danilo Gallinari for a reason. No, Hauser's going to be the answer. Oh, shut up. All right, the kid can shoot. The kid can shoot. Is he going to be the reason that they, like, win a championship this year? No. No, it's about Tatum and Tatum being in the MVP conversation. Can you tell, B-Rob, I'm already a little annoyed with the Sam Hauser thing?
I don't know, Jim. Do you know who's leading in plus-minus right now in the NBA?
Is Sam Hauser? Hauser?
That's Sam Hauser.
It is Sam Hauser. He does lead in plus-minus. Yeah, I saw
Grandy
tweet that.
Jordan Mickey at one point? Like, this is you guys do this. Stop it with your role players.
It was actually pretty hilarious when Tatum was asked about this, why Hauser led the NBA in plus-minus, and he was like, yeah, he plays with me a lot.
Well, he's not wrong. I mean, right. Honestly, like, yeah, Tatum's 100%. Like, that's so true. That's the one thing. I was wrong on Hauser, too. The one thing I didn't realize or take into account is that, yeah, when you put him out there with better players who create his shot for him, he's going to look a lot better. Most guys in summer league are guys that's like, oh, they get an opportunity they don't normally get during the regular season, which is for the offense to flow through them. That's not what Hauser is. Hauser's more of a spot-up shooter. He's better off when somebody else draws attention and he can get these open looks. And to his credit, he's knocked them down.
I got a name for you guys, though, for Hauser. Okay. As, like, best case scenario.
Okay.
Korver.
Oh. Wow, that's high.
That's a high ceiling.
I mean, that's...
Because
yeah.
Korver, man, the way Korver would come off picks, like, that guy was a maestro moving without the basketball.
Just talking best case here. But if he can get to... Because he, like you pointed out, Gasper, like, Duncan Robb, or as Forsberg said...
Yeah.
He's not as bad defensively as Duncan Robinson.
No.
Korver was never a good defender, but he could be okay.
Yeah.
And so if Hauser can be okay there and just be unbelievably elite shooting-wise, obviously much longer than 15 games, but if Korver was 15 years, then that's potentially the high point? The high point.
What about Strus? Would you put Strus above or below Korver?
Oh, I would put him below.
Yeah,
the Strus goose. Like, yeah. if he can be him, that would be my
thing. That's my ultimate. It's like, you know, I think ultimately at his highest point he could be Strus.
Yeah, I look at I had to cover him for like a year. Korver at his best, I found lethal. Like, I don't look at Sam Hauser so far and be like, that guy's gonna absolutely rip your heart out. Like, Korver had those nights where he would like, oh my god, he was like NBA Jam red hot. You could see the flames coming off of him.
Totally. It's exciting times for your Hawks.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. On that, it's about Jason Tatum. He's legitimately in the MVP conversation, to which, what, you wanted to ask me?
Yeah, just how do you feel?
Well,
No, I'm just going to throw this out here because I'm gonna throw out the trap. Here comes the trap, Celtics fans. So you're telling me Jason Tatum is the MVP of the league and it's not really close. I think he's definitely in the conversation. My MVP is Luka Doncic, but I get what you're saying. But then you're also telling me this is the deepest team in the league. So how can both those things be true? You know what I'm saying? In other words, Luka, if you have the deepest team in the league, then Luka's doing what Tatum's doing and maybe a little bit more with less talent. So that would make him the MVP, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No.
Or you're not the deepest team in the league. Your rotation's not as deep and you're being carried by Jason Tatum and you have to confess to not being the deepest team in the league. Both those things do not work. They're incompatible.
Look, I think he should be in the conversation. Is he the prohibitive favorite? I think that feels premature. And if you just look based on the numbers, Luka Doncic is the NBA's leading scorer. Like, he should probably be number one.
If you
right
just
now.
Watch Luka and what he has to do for that team, to me, it's Luka.
And just this week, putting up 42 and 35 over Portland and LA, like the Clippers.
He carries that team on his back.
Yeah, so in
every night
they're always going to defer to that. And Tatum had an off night last night, but Tatum's like in that top three. He's going to be in that conversation.
I think he's in the top two. And I just think he's behind Luka.
Okay, yeah, and I don't think that that's that drastic a thing to say like right now, because, but again, people overrate all the players around here, especially Celtics fans. No, Tatum's having a great year. He looks like he's completely dialed in. Is he number one? Number one? Like, no, not to me, but he should be in the conversation. He continues to have, and I too, you know, Forsberg brought it up. The one thing I would be concerned about as a Celtics fan right now is the too many minutes for him.
The minutes,
like, he shouldn't be around 38 a night right now. Like, it's been nice to see a little bit less for him this week. And I know he wants to push for the MVP, but really the eyes on the bigger prize here, please, this year, guys. Like, it's about, you know, getting over the hump and actually winning the title.
And that's still why, and certainly B-Rob and Forsby have seen more of the Celtics than I have. So, B-Rob, feel free to chime in here. But that's why I still feel like, even as well as Hauser has played, they need another wing, because Hauser's a very specific type of wing. And in order to take the burden and some of the playing time off of Tatum and Brown, I think you need another type of wing, you know, whether it's a... I'm just, some of these guys are low level and some of them are high level. But I mean, in the high end, I'd say Harrison Barnes. On the low end, I'd say like a guy like Gary Harris, who might be a little undersized for the wing, but, you know, at least he can play some tenacious defense. I still think you need another wing with more athleticism to be able to dial down the minutes of Tatum and Brown.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that's going to be a tough, if you have to pick one thing, like insurance for the bigs or the insurance for one of those guys to keep those minutes down. I think that's going to be a tough decision for this front office at the deadline, but I'm 100% with you there. These minutes have to come down. And Mazzulla actually was talking last night. He was getting some crap from his assistants when, you know, they're up by 26 points. Tatum is still in the game with 5 minutes left. Like, get him out of the game.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing here? We need to save this guy's legs.
Well, you know, that's the type of stuff you can't see from the second row. You got to adjust.
Yeah, it was that. It was the clip you played from last week, B-Rob, the stupid game in Detroit. Like,
right.
Late in that fourth quarter, what are you doing? Get him out of this game. Like, those are the ones I watch. I'm like, come stop this.
At least it's not like, remember, I know B-Rob remembers this when, like, Doc got kicked out of a game and, like, Tom Thibodeau made, like, no substitutions at all in the second half. He didn't make a single substitution.
20 straight minutes. And
20 straight minutes. No substitutions. And they lost.
Dean in Shrewsbury on the aforementioned Sam Hauser. You're up here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Hi, Dean.
Hi. I'm just sick of the Duncan Robinson comparisons coming from Felger and Maz. Hauser's never going to be a great defender, but his box plus minus is negative 0.3. His block and his steal percentage is average. He played that great play against Brandon Ingram. And then Alvarez, who's a great ball handler and quick, Sam Hauser picked his pocket. So these teams that are going after Hauser left and right are just stupid. He's an average defender.
Well, I think what it is, and I fall into this trap, Dean, it's the size thing. They're both, what, 6'7", 6'8"? You know, Hauser might actually be, or Robinson might be a little bit taller, but they're around the same size. I think that's why we fall into that trap.
Yeah.
No, I think Hauser's a much better defender.
I think Duncan Robinson's just so much more plodding and so much slower.
I would agree. I think, Dean, I think you're right. You know, I watched Hauser play a little bit in college, and he's definitely a better athlete than people give him credit for. And I thought that before this, and I've seen that just watching him play, he's more athletic than Duncan Robinson for sure. There's no question about that. You know, I think in terms of teams going after him, I think, look, you know, the Celtics have a lot of really good defenders, so you try and pick the weakest link in attack. I think teams are learning. They're not going to have as much success as they maybe thought against him, but I don't want to go full, like, you know, Jack Jones. It's like disrespectful to try and take a Sam Hauser in a switch when you get him one-on-one. He's going to have to earn it. I think teams are going to continue to test him. He was certainly very good last night, though.
617-779-0985, the phone number. You want to talk C's with us with one more segment to go. Got a couple open lines. We'll run through your phone calls coming up next, which will be our long commercial-free segment, which will segue into the final hour and a half of Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Oh, no.
You don't have to stay if you don't want, honestly.
I'm on the fence.
It's completely up to you.
We'll see how this FSU game is going. If I can mostly sit here and watch that for the last half hour, I'll do it.
Okay. Just your play-by-play for the last half hour.
Yeah, your call is coming up next.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on the Sports Hub.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem?
No match for a little DIY duct tape.
Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go.
No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now it's time to talk Celtics.
Wow! Good offensive rebound!
With Chris Gasper and Big Jim Murray on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, final segment of the Sports Hub Celtics show. Run through some of your calls here. Celtics off tonight, actually off until Monday night, when they'll be at 6-10, or currently 6-10, Chicago. Catch the call here on 98.5 Sports Hub. John Walk will be on the call once again with Cedric Maxwell. Let's go to Matt in Maine on Malcolm Brogdon. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Dean about Sam Hauser. Definitely an average defender and plays at least a little bit into why Missoula trusts him so much out on the floor. But my main point was, the one thing that I take away from this winning streak right now is I really don't love Malcolm Brogdon's fit so far with the second unit. I think that the offense gets a little stagnated with him as the primary ball handler, and it just takes too long for them to get going. I love him when, like, either Jalen or Jason, if they're playing with him, is bringing the ball up and is the primary ball handler and then getting him downhill, creating open lanes. But I just haven't loved the fit as much as I thought I would, and I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, I think, kind of early, but I do understand what you're saying. You know, I think part of it is who he's out there with sometimes on the second unit. It's easier for teams to focus on him and maybe to sort of clog the lane. But overall, as a player, the one thing about Malcolm Brogdon is he's kind of a very deliberate player. He's not a guy that really is going to, like, explode into his cuts or explode into his drives. And so that can sort of slow things down a little, bog things down, because he is deliberate. And in being that deliberate, sometimes it allows the defense to recover or set up, particularly if they're not worried about the other players he's out there on the floor with. He wasn't great last night, but, you know, we're rewatching some of this game now. The replay is on NBC Sports Boston. And he did have a couple of nice drives and dishes in the paint. And I still think his ability to play make, that's what Brad Stevens talked about the Celtics needed more of after they lost to the Warriors in the finals. His ability to get into lane and make plays for some other guys at some point, I think that will help the Celtics. And I also, frankly, at times in some of these games, would like to see him be part of the closing five, because given his resume and skill set, I still think he's your third best offensive option.
B-Rob, what have you made of Brogdon's game thus far in terms of the fit?
I think it's been stellar, to be honest. I think it's a situation where he can get into the paint whenever he wants right now. He looked a little bit rusty last night, but the fact that they have someone who can kind of control the second unit offense and get to spots that he wants to get to is pretty ideal for the long term. And I think it's going to be a matter now. The jump shot looks a little bit ugly to me. That's my one concern there. But as far as just having another option to go to take less pressure on Smart and other guys in that situation, I think that's pretty big.
Luke in Vermont on the Jason Tatum MVP conversation.
Luke. Hey, Luke.
Hey, guys. How's it going? So,
good.
Chris.
Yes.
I think if you want to say Luka's better than Tatum, I won't argue with you. I think Luka, Giannis, and Tatum are the three best players in the league right now. And I think Tatum has less holes of any of those three guys. Like, those other guys might do certain things better than him, but we know Luka's not a good defender. Tatum's a good defender. Giannis is amazing. You can say he's the best player in the world. Last night, he's 4 of 11 from the foul line. He's not a great shooter. Tatum is a great shooter. So I think it's those three guys, and then it comes down to, like, minutia, and it's like
SGA and OKC.
You could say
I would
Tatum, not that, not at that level. That's like, if you're doing it on that bad of a team, I don't think you get to be in the conversation for MVP. So and John Morant. There's other good players, but I think those three are all on teams that people think could at least get to their conference championship and are MVP caliber players, super, super duper stars. And with Tatum, his numbers won't be as good as Luka's because he doesn't have the ball as much. Luka's kind of like Houston Harden. Tatum, I think he deserves a little bit more credit than Luka for being on a championship contender and still being able to figure all that out and being the guy that's closing on the best team in the league. I think there's an argument to be made for both of them, but Tatum's put himself in the argument as the best player in the league on the best team. And as a Celtics fan, it just feels good that we're kind of finally there. We're not talking about Tatum and Brown as the best young duo or what these guys could be. And when you have a guy like Tatum, you're always going to have a chance. And
agreed.
It's just nice that we have Tatum. And I do think there's so much trickle-down effects. Like the guys that come in that we've been talking about for the last week not being, like, that great. And he joked about Hauser playing with Tatum. Pritchard, Hauser, all those guys do benefit from playing with Tatum. It's like, look how many guys that were average that were great because they played with LeBron. And Tatum's not LeBron, but he is a top three guy in the league, and we're lucky to have him.
I agree with all that. I totally agree with you. The only thing I'd say is I think Tatum is fortunate and maybe more fortunate than Luka. And even with Middleton out in Milwaukee, like I think it's inarguable that both those guys have more on their plate on a night-to-night basis in terms of, you know, they have to perform at a really high level or their team doesn't win, or they have to score or their team doesn't win, than Tatum does. And that's not a knock on Tatum. It depends on how you look at it, right? You can look at, okay, he's on the best team in the league and he's the best player. Absolutely. The flip side of it is you can look on it, well, he's on the best team in the league, and that's an advantage that Luka doesn't have, or even Giannis without Middleton. They don't have the advantage of having such a great supporting cast. And if there's like an off night and you just want to play like facilitator like Tatum did last night, then your team's still, you know, your team's not going to win. Like if Luka doesn't score, they're not going to win. If there's a big drop, there's a bigger drop off between Luka to Christian Wood in Dallas than there is here between Tatum and Brown.
Oh, without question. If you want to continue to weigh in on anything Celtics related, hey, feel free to give us a buzz. 617-779-0985. But that will wrap the Sports Hub Celtics show. We'll give you the headlines here and get into the final 90 minutes. That's right, 90 minutes of Gasper and Murray. Chris, super pumped to do that extra half hour. Will he stay for it? Who's to say? But he'll at least give me this hour, I think. See, Florida State's on the television here, so how much Chris am I actually getting?
They're playing Louisiana. It's going well. You're getting almost my full attention.
80% Gasper here as we get into the final 90 minutes of the show after the headlines here on 98.5 Sports.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.